Hello, and welcome to the Beacon Group's new meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Sharon, and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure that your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout rooms end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked my friend Andrew to read the 12 steps. Andrew?
Hi, I'm Andrew, alcoholic. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons that we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continue to make personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having a spiritual awakening. As the result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your service, Andrew. Today we will hear a talk on step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Please give a warm welcome to Wayne B. from Los Angeles, California. You have 30 minutes, Wayne, and then I'll just hold up my clock to give you 5-minute notice.
Good. My name is Wayne Butler. I'm an alcoholic. Good to be here. Great to be sober. I love AA. That probably would be the most important thing I say today, is that I love AA, because one of my last diagnoses at the Watertown Insane Asylum was an untreatable psychopath. And that was my last diagnosis coming into AA. And so this is a perfect step for me. Sherry, thank you for inviting me to share on step two. Where I come from, we call that the crazy step, for good reason. I want to just, it's interesting how chapter four is an entire chapter on one step, as four chapters in the big book and one in the 12 and 12 are devoted entirely to step one. Having an entire chapter suggests to me how important this chapter is, because there's only one other chapter in the big book that's entirely devoted to one step, and that's step seven, working with others, and that's devoted to the 12 step. So this got, it's like squiggly writing in the big book. Devoting an entire chapter suggests how important it is. But I have to wrap myself up here, and I want to thank my sponsees and grant sponsees for coming to support my talk. I love those guys, and they know it. I try to demonstrate that through service. The thing here, usually I like to tell part of my story just to acclimate you to the fact that I'm really an alcoholic. But it's interesting to note that in chapter four, and I'm going to read this, Bill Wilson sums up five chapters on step one into one sentence. And I'm so glad he did, because the simplicity of this one sentence allowed me to take a bite out of this program and actually begin to believe in it. And it's in the third sentence of the first chapter on page 44. And I want to preface it by saying this. I didn't read chapter four for quite a while. I'll tell you why. I've always believed in God. I've always loved God. I'm one of those interesting characters who understood free will as a kid. And so I never blamed God for anything that happened to me. I'm not a victim of God. And I'm grateful for that, because that came in handy later in my life, as it will show in my talk. But that created another problem too, because I didn't want to read, the title was We Agnostics. And I don't want to read that, because then God might think I really don't believe in him if I read a chapter like that. So folks, I did not read that chapter. And I told my sponsor why, because I knew he couldn't argue with that. It's my belief in God. I said, I don't want him to think, I don't want to commit blasphemy. But why do I need to read that chapter? I'm not agnostic. And I held on to that almost to my death. And he finally pried my closed mind. Actually, you know what's more dangerous than a closed mind? Is a made-up mind. I found that's more dangerous than a closed mind. And I had made my mind up. I was never reading that chapter. And my sponsor finally got me willing to where I would read it with an open mind. And I'm so glad he did, because it turns out I'm a chapter four alcoholic. You know, when I did step one, admitted I was powerless over alcohol, I didn't really understand the full measure of that. But I knew that what Dr. Silkworth said was, I can't drink alcohol safely. I knew that was true. I'd proven it over and over and over again, that once I take that first drink. And so when I read this sentence, it struck me hard. It says, if, and I'm going to put it in the first person for my benefit, if when I honestly want to, do I find I cannot quit drinking entirely? You know what? I can lie to you. I lied to my wife. I lied to the military. I lied to Popo. I can lie to anybody. But when I looked at that man in the glass, I knew good and well that I couldn't quit and stay quit. That baffled me, but I knew it was true. Then the second sentence, or if when drinking, do I have little control of the amount I take? You know, folks, I knew that was true, too, but I didn't understand that either. That was the baffling feature of alcohol that Bill writes about in conclusion of step two and how it works. Because if you remember, when we get done reading the how it works, and it goes on over, this is then you are ready to take step three. So how it works is interesting, how it sums up in step two what we're leading into. And it says that, and so when I needed to control my drinking, once I took that first drink, I couldn't control it. That's powerlessness where alcohol is concerned. That's how simple it is. When I want to quit and quit entirely, I can't. And when drinking, I have little control of the amount I take, or no control, one or the other. I'm not an alcoholic that can try to control and enjoy my drinking. If I'm controlling it, I'm not enjoying it. If I'm enjoying it, other people want me to control it. It's the darndest thing I've ever seen. It's like a paradox. I didn't understand it. And then it goes on to say, you are probably alcoholic. I love the word probably. I went like this. That was close. Probably suggests to me, but not for certain now. And I want to share with you guys, you know, I've been sober since 8th of November, 1977. That's 45 years, 9 months, and 21 days, one day at a time. And when I was new, I didn't understand anything of what I'm about to share on step two. All this education, this understanding of my dilemma, not self-knowledge, but knowledge of my condition. Folks, if it wasn't for the knowledge of my condition, I don't believe I would ever have been restored to sanity, because I would never have done this work if I wasn't convinced I had to do it to save my life. And so where it says probably alcoholic, and I've learned in my time of sobriety that those of us who die drunk and loaded, we die because we don't get from probably to definitely. And I've learned in my time that I didn't just jump from probably to definitely. What happened was somewhere in that first year, I guess, somewhere during the 12 steps, somewhere during sponsorship, somewhere where I was sponsoring somebody else, somewhere in all that action and service and work, I got pulled from probably to definitely. And somewhere one day I raised my hand. I said, I'm Wayne Butler. I'm an alcoholic. And I believed it. Until then, I was just doing it to fit in. I was doing it because my sponsors thought I should identify as an alcoholic. And then I learned identifying is not raising my hand and saying I'm an alcoholic. That's not identification. That's admission. That's all that is. Has very little power. It has the power of influence for a minute. Identification comes from when you guys tell your story and I go like this. Oh, me too. Me too. I did that too. And so I was able to admit my powerlessness over alcohol simply because you guys taught me what it meant to be powerless. And one day I accepted that as the truth. And Dr. Silkworth said, I can't drink safely. The second part of that first step that leads me to step two is that my life had become unmanageable. I'm one of them alcoholics that was unmanageable before I ever took the first drink. Does anybody else relate to that? Raise your hand if you relate to that. How many of us were unmanageable? And I don't mean necessarily with my checkbook. I mean mentally and emotionally. How many of us had unmanageable emotions? Man, my emotions were off the rocker right out. I think I came out emotional. I wasn't crying because I'm a childbirth. I'm crying because I can't stand life already, and I just came out of the chute. Now, of course, I'm exaggerating that, but it sounds good to my – it kind of reflects what I felt like throughout my childhood. So I want to say this. You know, Chuck C., and I'm not name-dropping. I'm just stating facts about an influencer in my life. Chuck C. told me that there's a lot of dualities in AA, and it sings with the duality of life. And when that step says came to believe, it was important to know this. When Bill and the pioneers wrote this book and they laid out these steps, when he said came to believe implies one thing, they didn't believe. They came to believe that not believe in God, that's not the issue. Believe that they could be restored to sanity. Sanity is defined as soundness of mind. And none of us, I don't think, many of us, most of us, cannot declare that we were of sound mind and body when we came to AA. I can't buy that. There's no way I was of sound mind and body. And I have 21 psychiatric diagnoses. And here's why this step is so important. I came to you guys, okay, I'm alcoholic, but what's really wrong with me? I came to you with 21 psychiatric diagnoses. I was psychiatrically institutionalized 17 times from the age of 9 to the age of 27. And the only time I felt normal or somewhat fit to be amongst society was when I was drinking Budweiser. I have to tell you folks something. You give me 3 Budweisers and I go from zero to hero in the blink of an eye. It does something for me it's not biochemically indicated to do. If I could say so, I would say what alcohol did was created a spiritual experience inside me. It altered my perception of reality. And I know alcohol is not supposed to do that. And I developed an obsession for alcohol. And I was not addicted to alcohol. I didn't drink long enough to get physically addicted. Alcohol is not addicted by nature. I don't care what the moneymakers try to tell us. Alcohol, scientifically, alcohol is not addicted by nature. 9 out of 10 people can drink safely. So that baffled me. Remember where Bill wrote and how it works? Alcohol. This is part of step two. Alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. It baffled me why I couldn't quit and stay quit. It baffled me why I couldn't stop when I needed to, why I couldn't control it. And that baffled me because I know the science of ethanol alcohol. I know that all these other people can drink and go to work, don't hurt nobody. They just have fun. They have a good time. Some drink heavy and they give up if they got a good enough reason. It baffled me why I couldn't tell my wife, I will be home after work, I promise. And I couldn't keep that promise. I didn't understand why. It baffled me. And the powerful effect of alcohol is when I take a few drinks, I'm not retarded anymore. When I take a few drinks, I get good looking. When I take a few drinks, I go from zero to hero. And it's like, I need to feel like a hero because I feel like such a zero, if you understand what I mean. And I know you do. And I didn't understand that. And so I needed to be restored to soundness of mind. But what I've discovered in my step work over the years, one day at a time, is there's a duality to step two. And this is important. And let me just comment on this before I get lost in my own weeds here. I've discovered in my sobriety, there's three phases of 12-step development. And if there's anybody new in this meeting, I want you to hear this. I think this is the greatest bit of hope that I ever got. And those three phases are desperation, restoration, and transformation. Desperation phase is steps one, two, and three, because I don't believe I or many of us would ever have done steps one, two, and three if we weren't absolutely desperate. And I was desperate. Thank God I was desperate, because I can guarantee you I would have never become willing to turn my will and my life over to anybody or anything had I not been desperate to save my own life. So the duality with step two that I've learned with the help of my influencers and my sponsors was there's a twofold approach to this idea of soundness of mind. The first one in the big book deals with my soundness of mind where alcohol is concerned. And I want to report to you that I believe I have gained soundness of mind where alcohol is concerned, because I believe what Dr. Silkworth wrote, and I have evidence of my own life, that once I take a drink, I can't control it and I can't quit when I want to. And Dr. Silkworth said, abnormal drinkers like these can't drink alcohol in any amount at all, in any form at all, safely. That one word saved my life. Saved, because he'd have said these abnormal drinkers can't drink alcohol no matter what. I'd have had to drink just to find out for sure. And I tried that test on myself. It didn't work. But what he said was safely. And that word resonates in my head 45 years later. Butler, you can't drink alcohol. I remember when they came out with little Duels non-alcoholic beer. How many of you remember that? Lee, I know you do. When they came out with that non-alcoholic beer. I called my sponsor because I drank Budweiser. Anheuser-Busch makes old Duels. I thought, wow, non-alcoholic beer, maybe I can have one of those. That's alcoholic thinking right there. The idea that maybe I can drink this non-alcoholic beer. I called my sponsor. I said, hey, Barney, what do you think of that non-alcoholic beer, that El Duels? And he says, well, I think it was made for non-alcoholics. And they knew you'd wonder, so they put it right on a bottle, non-alcoholic beer. And he hung up on me. And it's like saved again from my own devious thinking. And there's been so many instances where the insane idea that maybe one day somehow I'll be able to drink safely or like normal people, which is safely, has to be defeated, has to be ground down. And it finally was. But the second duality of that has to do with the restoration phase that I'm going to be going into once I get past step three. That's 4 through 9. And it's like restored to soundness of mind where life is concerned. Folks, I had trouble. And, you know, I want to read something. I want to read a couple of things out of the big book if I can. After he gave me that one sentence, you are probably alcoholic, he says, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness, not disease. If you are suffering from an illness, if he had put, you know, well, I'll talk about that in a minute. Suffering from an illness, which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no disease known to science that requires a spiritual experience to conquer it. Man, if that was the case, we'd have cancer patients in these meetings. We'd be overwhelmed with all these people with diseases if AA was designed to treat any disease of any kind. And AA, here's a return to sanity. AA is not designed to treat disease of any kind, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm so glad to know our big book hasn't been changed. And we of Alcoholics Anonymous still ascribe to the illness, the allergy of the body, obsession of the mind, coupled with a spiritual malady, an underlying soul sickness. I'm glad we stuck to that, because that keeps our program on true north, if you know what I mean. But only a spiritual experience will conquer. That baffled me again, because I thought, wait a minute, I don't understand. Because I just got sober about the time this disease concept was gaining traction in all the treatment centers and all the psychology that was going on. And all of a sudden, everybody had a disease that was doing something to them. And I bought into it because it sounds good. But I'm a victim, see? I'm a victim's connoisseur. It's like, you give me a chance to be a victim and I will. And that's the greatest tool of a victim is the disease concept. Why? Because you'll start hearing me say nonsensical things like, my disease wants me dead. My disease is doing push-ups. When I beat my wife, I was in my disease. What I'm doing there is I'm giving up all personal responsibility for anything I did and blaming it on this disease they talk about, or I'm blaming it on alcohol. But the truth of the matter is, when I committed domestic violence, it was me doing it, not alcohol, not some disease. I was doing it. And folks, until I became soundness of mind enough to take responsibility for my behavior, irregardless of the circumstances, I was not going to get well. I was not going to recover. And I'm so glad that the words he used are so important. Let me move on to paragraph two. It's the last sentence. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not easy alternatives to face. That is so true for me. How do I face that? When I don't, first of all, I don't really know what's wrong with me just yet. I'm just now getting into step two, which is going to lay out the symptoms of my mental and emotional disorders and help me come to understand what it is that makes me drink. And I didn't know it was this simple. I make me drink. That's like, there's nothing out there making me drink, although it seems that way. It's the illusion. When I was 9 years old, I was walking home from school on a Friday, and I got taken off of the street by a pedophile, locked in his basement in his coal bin, and I got tortured, raped, and beaten over 3 days. On Monday morning, he threw me out in the street naked, black and blue from head to toe, and he told me if I told anybody it was him, he'll kill me and my family. And I knew he would. There was not a doubt in my mind. Folks, I didn't utter a word of that until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in my fifth step. But I want you to know something. That did not make me alcoholic. And all the behaviors that I did, like when I got back in Vietnam, I sought to get revenge against him because now I know how to get revenge. I'm going to get him. I didn't have a program to work, but I'm still the one who did the behavior, and I had to make amends to that before I would ever be restored to soundness of mind where life is concerned. And so when I'm just going to touch on this because I'm going to stick to step two. But the second phase of 12-step development is the restoration phase, where I have an opportunity to get a second start, to get a beginning, to actually have a chance, a second chance at life, to find freedom from the bondage itself. And part of that restoration phase is it being restored to soundness of mind where life is concerned, because I was really confused about life. And the only thing that ever gave me relief was a few drinks of Budweiser. And folks, if I don't find a way to get relief in step two, if I don't take that is my launching pad. That is my high dive platform, if you will. It doesn't say I believe. It says came to believe because they knew I didn't believe. I didn't. And I'm not agnostic. But what I discovered was Bill wrote something here. I want to read the next line after that. Not easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were exactly of that type. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. It's interesting to note where that came from. Remember, this in the early stages working with Reverend Sam Shoemaker, Bill was enlightened to a lot of spiritual ideas, not only from him, but from other people in the Oxford group. It's interesting to note that in 1944, Bill was invited to the New York State Medical Society to give a talk and to answer questions. My interest was piqued because I wondered, why did they invite Bill? He's not a doctor. He's a bankrupt stock speculator. Dr. Bob's a doctor. Why didn't they invite Bob? That curiosity led me to research that meeting of the AMA and the APA. And what I discovered was they asked Bill, here's a particular question he asked him. They asked Bill, of your fellowship of men and a handful of women had not been alcoholic, how would you describe their personality makeups? And he said, well, half would have been normal in every regard, able, intelligent, friendly people, except for the effect alcohol has on them. And then he says, the other half, and I can see him raising his hand, were more or less pronounced neurotic. And I understood that I have an emotional predisposition at birth, and I didn't understand that either. And you know what? What really helped me get free and to be willing to take these steps in all circumstances was because I came to believe that I'm that type of alcoholic Bill talked about that was more or less pronounced neurotic right from the gate. And he said later in how it works, some of us seem to have been born this way. Now, the next sentence is, half our fellowship were exactly of that type. We call that the Bill W type, the type that are more or less pronounced neurotic, intensely emotional. Any other emotor boats in the room? How many of us have uncontrollable emotions? My psych report read, Wayne has no impulse control. That was one of the mainstays in my life. And so I didn't have any control over my mind. Sort of like I had no brakes on the engine and on the car and no governor on the engine. If I had something to say, I said it. And then I wished I hadn't said it. Or it's sort of like fire, aim, shoot, you know, I don't know how that goes. Okay, and then it goes down, it says, but after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. That or else, that's a threat right there. We must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Half of us thought. And what he wrote about later, because I don't have time to go into all that, and I don't want to bore you with my reading. On page 46, he talks about agnostic temperament. And on page 53, he says agnostically inclined. Folks, I want you to know something. I want to spend the rest of my time on that idea right there. Do you know that I go to bed, I do my 11th step, I feel great when I go to bed, and I wake up and I'm full of darkness, and I don't know why. I had a great day. I'm not talking about today. I'm talking about during the course of my 45 years. I would go to bed happy, joyous, and free, and I would wake up afraid, full of self-doubt, self-centered fear, and I didn't know that that's called agnostic temperament, agnostic inclination. It's like, because of my illness, I am inclined to doubt myself chronically. I am inclined to doubt everything about me. And that sets up a temperament where I don't believe in anything. I don't believe in you. I don't believe in me. I doubt myself. I have no faith in me. And I doubt that God can help me. Because I don't understand. So that was important for me to read those two words, agnostic temperament, agnostic inclination. And what I came to believe, folks, what I came to believe before I came to believe I could restore to sanity, I came to believe that this was true for me. I came to believe I'm not agnostic, but I sure have that temperament. I can go from faithful to doubtful in a blink of an eye, and I don't know why. It just happens. Anybody else have that happen to them? You don't know why. It's just there. And I don't know what to tell anybody. I don't know how to work that. And I did not believe after 17 psych wards and 21 diagnoses, I didn't think I could be restored to sanity. Matter of fact, they told me that. I want to tell you a quick story. My last institutionalization, I'd gone to a meeting and my sponsor said, this program works better if you don't drink. And I thought about that across the room and I did the most horrible thing. I pulled my 357 out and pointed at my sponsor. I fired a round off at my sponsor. And I'd gone to that meeting after I left my mom's house and set it on fire and I blew my dad's car up. And that got me sent to the Watertown Insane Asylum for the 14th time. And I wasn't going to get out. They had me in there on a lifetime indefinite commitment based on this board of psychiatry that made all the decisions for my life. And it's interesting to note that when you're in a psychiatric hospital, you have no legal rights of any kind. Can't get a lawyer. That just doesn't happen. You're at the mercy of this board of psychiatrists. They had me medicated to the gills, and I had absolutely no chance of recovery under those diagnoses. I want to tell you, I will say this, is that I didn't think I was ever getting out of there. I endured their shock treatments. I endured their medication. I endured the beatings I got at night. They tried to correct my behavior that way. I'm not blaming these. There's no emotion behind what I'm telling you. I'm just reporting facts. I was convinced there was no, and I wanted a drink. I needed a drink because I knew drinking would solve that for a minute. And so I needed to be restored to soundness of mind. I never thought that was ever going to happen to me. But this chapter tells me, he says, we have written the book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. To be spiritual as well as moral. Could you imagine? So many people are saying outside, not in AA, it's an outside issue, but it's an inside issue in a way. They're saying the alcoholism is not a moral problem. But that baffles me too, because it's not a moral problem. We're only a six-step program, because six of our steps are directly related to morality of life. And my problems, Chuck C. said, are one, I have one problem. That's conscious separation from God, the needed power to live. It doesn't talk about God just yet too much. It talks about a power greater than myself. But I know what they're talking about. They're talking about God. And I want you to know I'm okay with the word God. And the reason I'm okay with the word God is because God's not a religion. And I don't make religion out of the word God. God is a spiritual entity. Bill said spirit of the universe underlines the totality of things. So he said, over, as a matter of fact, on page 46, he says, as soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlines the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power direction, provided, this is a condition, provided we took other simple steps. And that's 10 through 3 through 10, 12. And it's like, I like spirit of the universe underlying totality thing, but that's too long to say. So I think God suffices. So I started using the word God. And then he talks about how alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. And so when I got to these symptoms, I was having trouble with personal relationships. Anybody relate? Raise your hand. I see that. Thank you. I was having trouble with personal relationships. I was prey, P-R-E-Y. Prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living. And by the way, that just doesn't mean money. Make a living, make a way of it in life. You heard people say we have to learn to live life on life's terms. I have to tell you something, folks. That's not in the big book or in any of our approved literature, live life on life's terms. That's a misstatement that has the power to take the life of newcomers. I'll tell you why. I was living life on life's terms when I came here. Life allows me to do whatever I want if I'm willing to pick up the tab. But what our book says is we learn to accept life on life's terms, but live it on a spiritual basis if I'm to recover. And I came to believe that was true for me. I came to believe. It says that I had a feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. I was full of fear. I was unhappy. I couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Was not a basic solution. Benevolence more important than whether she knew it was a lunar flight. Of course it was. Those bedevilments were there before I ever took my first drink. And then the power of alcohol altered my perception of those problems and made them seem not to be there. That's a problem. But then it goes on to say, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship, by other things, but in some form or other, it is there. He called it the great reality. It says, with this attitude, I cannot fail. The consciousness of my belief is sure to come to you. You see, it hasn't come yet. He said, it's sure to come to me if I can just follow these simple instructions. And I'm so grateful to know that. And I got about 4 minutes left. I just want to tell you something. When it comes to step two, coming to believe that a power could restore me to soundness of mind, where I might be able to fit in society, I might be able to be a part of, that's a requirement, the book says. They use the word required. That's a requirement to find my way through the rest of this program one day at a time. And for those of you who might be new, I don't need to talk to these older people, older timers. They know what I'm talking about. For you new people, it's important to believe that I'm not going to be arrogant and say if I can stay sober, anybody can. That would be so arrogant of me to say that. But I can tell you this, if you relate to me or you relate to other people, why can't AA work for you? It's worked for millions of people in Alcoholics Anonymous through the years. Why can't it work for you? It's worked for me. It's working for me one day at a time. But you know what? I'm not cured of agnostic temperament and agnostic inclination. It's still there. And that's why it's so important to move off of step two and move into step three as rapidly as I understood that there is a possibility that one day I will come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to soundness of mind. And that's what I took step three on. I took step three on the hope it would. I took step three on the possibility that one day I would walk the streets a free man, that I wouldn't have to be medicated, that I wouldn't have to be under psychiatric care, that I wouldn't have to be fear of losing the freedom to come and go and do and be as I please because I'm not taking the medication they made me take. And so what I can tell you is this. Since the 8th of November, 1977, I've taken nothing into my body that affects me from the neck up. And it was a difficult test. I'm not telling anybody not to take it. I'm telling you I didn't because I somehow knew my dilemma was spiritual and not clinical. And I want to wrap it up with this. The disease concept almost killed me. I hid behind the disease. I blamed the disease. I gave it an artificial intelligence. I said my disease made me. That's an artificial. No, it didn't. I took all the actions that got me and other people in trouble. And I need to understand that. Otherwise, I'm never going to get free of being a victim because victims don't get to stay sober one day at a time. And that's why I'm not giving you a victim talk. I'm telling you about my victory. And you know, there's two goals in AA. One is victory over alcohol and the other is freedom from the bondage of self. And until step two became clear to me and I came to believe that I possibly could be restored to soundness of mind, I was doomed to that ideology. But I want to report to you newcomers that if you'll just take these simple steps, entertain the idea that for you, that you can come to believe and be restored to soundness of mind as well. And I'd like to think on a daily basis, I have the opportunity to be restored to soundness of mind. And I'm going to close with this. Do you know Alcoholics Anonymous is designed to do one thing and one thing only, in my opinion. It's not designed to treat disease of any kind. It's designed to treat and resolve the conflicts of one thing. And that's an internal spiritual maladjustment. The truism factor of alcoholism. Internal spiritual maladjustments, which means, simply put, I'm maladjusted to the spiritual life, and there comes all my problems. And I found out that Alcoholics Anonymous is one thing. It's a kit of tools to allow me to adjust myself to life as it presents itself and to adjust myself to a spiritual way of living. And I've discovered that Chuck C. was right. Once I align myself with this idea of a higher power through my service and work in AA, that I have this possibility, I have this opportunity to not only be restored to soundness of mind, but to actually have victory over alcohol and freedom from the bondage of self. And the third phase of 12-step development is transformation. And I cannot be transformed if I don't follow through on all 12 steps. And in steps 10, 11, and 12 is the transformation phase after I've been restored to soundness of mind in steps 4 through 9. I only share that because I want you newcomers to have hope. I'm still being transformed. God isn't done with me yet. I'm in the transformation phase, have been for many years now. I'm under no silly idea that I can't drink one day. I like what Clancy always said when he closed his talk. He says, I'm sober today, but I might not be in the future. always humble, always able to assert that he's not cured, and neither am I. I'm sober with you today. I may not be someday. But if I keep doing the requirements of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've got a good shot at it. Thank you, Sherry, for inviting me to share.